Oh, first, I was asked a moment ago about the split socks that you'll notice. Barbara Beecham asked me. The reason for those is that many years ago, when all the clothes had to be handmade and socks had to be hand-knit, and it didn't take long for the Austrian housewife to learn which part of the sock wore out. So she could knit a pair of tops, and they would last forever, and only have to knit on the bottom. The next two dances that we're going to do, the first one is Oxdansen, and this is a dance that the entering freshmen in the university in Sweden were required to do as part of their initiation ceremonies, and they were made to believe that they were as awkward as oxen. And then we're going to follow that with Hammerschmiedgesellen, which is a German dance and depicts the carpenter's apprentices hamming it up, having a good time, at the end of which they get ladies in the audience and so forth to finish the dance with them by waltzing around the room. Thank you.
ropeways, always, right here in our very own park, we have Abner J., and he's here with his little daughter. What is her name? Brandy. With Brandy, she's a surprise, to rattle the bones, Abner J.
Testing. Now you ask them educated people, them school teachers and things, about original American music. Already start telling you about jazz. J-A-Z-Z. Now how far can you go back with jazz? 1890, that's all. That ain't far at all. They start telling you about ragtime. How far can you go back with ragtime? 1897. That ain't much older than I am. See? I'm the same to American music that John Dean was to Watergate. I'm uncovering 270 years of American music, nobody doing nothing about it but me. The first form of American music, and I get so sick and tired of people not knowing nothing about American music. First form of American music, rattled the bones. Your original American bands were made up of bone players. See? 15 and 20 dudes. That's all the instrument they had. To just modernize it, I added this harmonica. And this song dates back 1620. That's how far back the rattle of the bone go. And these are real bones. Bones come from the boneyard. When a car gets struck by lightning, you don't eat that car unless you eat at McDonald's. See? You heard what I said, didn't you? See? See? You take the car to the boneyard and the possum eat the meat and we eat the possum. And ain't nothing on better for you than baked possum with them baked taters all around there.
Amen.
That's why I'm 65 years old and I'm not bald headed and I'm not gray headed because I grease my hair with possum oil. See, talk is cheap. Yes. And we're going to do you a little bit of rattled D-bone. Bones all the way home, rattle, rattle the bones all the way home. In 1620, we took a boat ride when we got on the other side, and we were surprised. And late in the evening, when the darkness started to groan, and everybody rattled, they rattle, rattle the bones, rattle, rattle the bones. All the way home, the rattle, rattle of the bone, all the way home. Thank you. When I was a boy, there wasn't no such thing as no man getting no divorce from his wife. First time I ever heard of divorce, I was 31 years old, and I didn't know what it was, and I went down and got me one, but I liked it all right, see? And, but when a man's wife left him, he didn't beat on her head. He beat on the old jawbones, and she came back home. And even the little kids beat on the jawbone, too, see? And I got 16 youngs, gonna get some more. And this is my 16th kid right here. And if this ain't my kid, they ain't a car in Texas.
Yes.
And don't y'all worry about me, see. Because talk is cheap. And Stephen Foster, this is Stephen Foster Center. I dare you entertainers to come here from far and near and don't recognize my man, Stephen Foster. He wrote about jawbones. And in his song books, Beat on the Old Jawbone tells a true story where Angelina Baker left and the husband and the kid beat on the jawbone till he came back. And it goes like this.
Angelina Baker, Angelina Baker's gone. She left me here to weep a tear and beat on the old jawbone. Early in the morning, on a lovely summer day, I asked for Angelina, they said she's gone away. I don't know where to find her, cause I don't know where she's gone. She left me here to weep a tear and beat on the old jawbone. Angelina Baker, Angelina Baker's gone. She left me here to weep a tear and beat on the old jawbone. And beat on the old jawbone.
And then the ones that didn't have no bones, they had to play their own bones. This was sometimes called playing with yourself. You see, now when Jimmy Carter get through with you cutting back this energy, you're going to have to play with yourself because you ain't going to have no electricity to play no television, see. See. And this dates back to 1625. This is known as the ham bone. See, now don't get me wrong, folks. White man is a smart man. He made a cotton picker so I won't have to pick cotton no more. And I used to pick 500 pounds of cotton a day. Matter of fact, I'm still the world champion cotton picker. See, and white man is a smart man, don't get me wrong. He made a tractor so I won't have to walk behind a mule no more. And I walked behind a mule so long, I could look at a mule's tail and tell you what time it was. Along about 12 o'clock noon when the mule started sweating, smelled like collard greens cooking. Don't get me wrong, folks. White man is a smart man, he made a telephone. So I could call my mom-in-law up and talk to her on the phone, keep her from coming over to my house. Now, who wants to be barred with a mom-in-law with 16 young? Don't get me wrong, folks. On July the 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong of Ohio walked on the moon, beat the Russians to the moon, beat the Yugoslavians to the moon, beat the Chinese to the moon, beat the Lebanese to the moon. But one thing a white man can't do, he can't beat no ham bone. Okay. You ain't never seen a black dude beat the ham bone. You ain't never seen it done right. That you see on hee-haw is a joke. And if you ain't never seen this black dude beat the ham bone, you still ain't never seen it done right. Because I'm the only black dude done it right, and I challenge you. And we're going to give you a combination of the ham bone and the jawbone, just like they did 300 years ago. How you let this mic down here, baby? We ain't got no time to waste. Right there.
ham bone, hammy in the hole it. Give me a pretty girl, show you how to hold her. Give me a pretty girl, show you how to kiss her. Give me an ugly girl, show you how to miss her. I want a gal who's nice and fine. Come on, love me all the time. Not an ugly woman like old Mag. She ain't nothing but a nag and a hag. I got a gal, she's 9 feet tall. She sleeps in the kitchen with her feet in the hall. I got a gal, she's 3 feet tall. She sleeps in the kitchen with her feet in the kitchen. I got a gal, she's 2 feet tall. She ain't got no feet at all. ham bone, where you been? All around the world, I'm grinding again. Go on then, boy.
cool off. We have a long way to go. Long way to go. Put a stopper in his mouth. Our next performer also works at Stephen Foster Center, and we are very proud of her. She works with Barbara and me and does many, many kind things for us. And she's a poet. She writes her material, and she's here to do a little sketch for us. She's making her debut to such this lovely big audience. Receive her well, Yvonne Bryant of White Springs. Isn't she great? Let's give her another hand. And a very special picking and singing treat, our very own Peyton Brothers from Jacksonville. I have to back up. I guess Jet Gamble was wading in the river or changing his britches or something, and he just reported in. But here is Florida's favorite troubadour, Gamble Rogers.
Thank you so much. No, not yet. Well, let's everybody just sit back and relax. Before I jump on this thing and start trying to go for show business, I'd just like to play you one of my all-time favorite songs about two little boys who made a promise to each other when they were children and who lived to redeem their promise on the field of honor in the American Civil War. Two little boys. Two little boys had two little toys. Each had a wooden horse. Gaily they'd play each summer's day. Warriors bold, of course. One little chap had a mishap. Broke off his horse's head. And he wept for his toy, then cried for joy when he heard his brother say, "Do you think I could leave you crying when there's room on my horse for you? So climb up here, Jack, stop your crying. We'll mend your horse with glue. And when we grow up, we'll both be soldiers. And our horses will not be toys. And then perhaps we'll remember when we were just two little boys." Away to where Joe lay, and he heard his brother say, "Do you think I could leave you dying when there's room on my horse for you? So climb up here, Joe, we'll soon be flying back to the boys in the blue. Can't you see, Jack, I'm all a tremble? It may be the flash and the noise, or it may be because I remember when we were just two little boys." You know, back when I was trying to grow up in the Coochie Valley, there wasn't a whole lot shaking. In fact, I do not believe that me and my boy cousins would have made it through had it not have been for the Sky Lake Campfire Girls. Yeah, about every third Saturday, we'd hear the sylvan, tender sweet bird song flitterings of the Sky Lake Campfire Girls steaming down the valley, stuffed into that big steak body truck, just a shimmering rainbow panoply of prepubescent pulchritude. Singing those wonderful old Campfire Girl songs like "I Wish I Was a Fishy in the Sea." "I'd swimmy and I'd scooty without no bathing suity. Oh, I wish I was a..." And I stand before you tonight mortally embarrassed to admit that these half-baked sentiments absolutely drove us wild. For you see, we were just young pups, growing boys. All of us had simultaneously transcended that threshold of awareness that threshold of confusing awareness wherein we were bedeviled by that all-pervasive, intransigent, overwhelming escalation of the sap of blood lust. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly natural. We were just growing up. But it's confusing to go through something like that. Don't you folks remember how confusing it was to go through puberty? Going through puberty is like the first time you ever held a boa constrictor. In a situation like that, you don't know whether you're holding a snake or that thing's holding you. But you flat know something's got you. Now, us boys figured maybe if we could spy on those campfire girls, we might find out what it was had hold of us. Now, they always roasted marshmallows and weenies down by my granddaddy's spring. Us boys would flit out of the house, and we'd ghost from tree to tree, and we'd hit the dirt, and we'd inch along in the manner of amorous angleworms. We would attain the high ground, spread that penultimate spray of greenery, and look down upon that smorgasbord of sensuality. And it was there, lying in close communion with Mother Earth, that I sustained my first great revelation regarding the bees and the flowers, which was simply this, that I was lying ankle to Adam's apple in poison ivy. Buddy, I ain't never been able to look at a campfire girl since without scratching. Bless your heart. I think you remember that, don't you? Some of you got it coming. Bless your heart. I know a little girl, and I want her for my wife. She's pretty and sweet and neat little feet, never been kissed in her life. I ask her for a kiss, she says, oh, what a beau. And every time she vows and declares she'll never do so anymore. Gonna be a better girl and never kiss again. Afraid my ma might find it out and cause her great pain. Well, you may walk and talk and hold my hand, but kissing is a crime. I'll not kiss you anymore until next time. Intend to stay. She laid her head on my shoulder and said, the old folks are away. I kissed her a dozen times. Someone came to the door, and every time she vows and declares she'll never do so anymore. Gonna be a better girl and never kiss again. Afraid my ma might find it out and cause her great pain. Well, you may walk and talk and hold my hand, but kissing is a crime. I'll not kiss you anymore until next time. Friend, I would like to sing a hymn of praise to one of the most seldom celebrated ethnic groups of American heroes, men for whom the noble concepts of free determination, personal integrity, and Yankee ingenuity are as natural as breathing. I'm speaking, of course, of the commercial fishermen of Big Lake George. Well, now, Big Lake George is right down the Ocklawaha River from Eureka. Well, it's near Palatka. Oh, it's a big one. Early of an a.m., when the pellucid atmosphere about the perimeter of the lake is the color of gunmetal gray spangled with burgundy wine, and gossamer streamers of sunlight shaft skyward through the palmetto and cypress fringe, and the noble blue heron and the sassy anhinga leave the sanctity of the rookery in search of sustenance, you can hear these waterborne good old boys whipping over the surface of the lake, each one sitting tall in his 40-year-old flat-bottom paint-flake plywood fishing skiff with a bow piled high with crab traps, trot lines, and fish weirs. He's got a Winchester rifle up there. If he catches some pilgrim rustling his crab traps, he'll perforate his sorry carcass and sink him in the sanctified water of the mystic lake. For he flat do not care. Oh, I can see him now, sitting tall at the helm of his noble craft, his sinewy arm wrapped authoritatively about the tiller bar of a 175-horsepower Mercury outboard motor with a quicksilver lower unit and a racing propeller, stirring a paper plate full of pot liquor and grits nailed down to the seat at his left side, his horny, callow right hand wrapped about the frosted confines of a 16-ounce can of Carling's Black Label beer, whipping through the Florida atmosphere, 83 miles an hour, his mouth a thin white line, flared nostrils, he say, she. He flat don't care. Now, I used to think these old boys caught lots of crabs and fish to buy a big old rig like that. Well, sir, one time I'm knocking around in front of those Gulf oil pumps down there in Georgetown. One of these commercial fishermen whips in off the highway pulling his rig behind his Dodge Club Cab pickup truck. You know the Dodge Club Cab, don't you? That's the stretch version of your common pickup, so you can carry two gun racks. He opened a door. He eased out in my direction, a symphony in country grace. I was up for the occasion. I had on my tight Levi's, my Johnny Cash belt, and my Bluebell Wrangler shirt with the pearl snap buttons. As he came toward me, I sized him up. I said, Heidi. He looked me over. He said, she. I said, buddy, you must catch right smarter crabs and fish to buy a big old kicker like that. He said, A pilgrim? I didn't get that outboard motor catching no crabs. That's where the second part of the tale commences. Winding out of the Georgia Piedmont like a malignant magic carpet of concrete is Interstate 75. It bores relentlessly southward, splits the state of Florida asunder, takes off toward Tampa past the greatest commercial concession ever articulated in the entrepreneurial visionings of modern mankind, a veritable monument to the legacy of Mickey Mouse, Disney World, a $500 million jukebox in the honky-tonk of life, Disney World. And down that road every day, you've got 35,000 native sons of this proud American soil coming to reaffirm their frontier heritage according to the doctrine of Donald Duck. And here comes the average American tourist in his Winnebago camper. He's got two Yamaha trail bikes on the front bumper. He got an old town canoe tied to the left side. He's got four snowmobiles on the roof. He's got a pair of L.L. Bean polypropylene snowshoes crossed on the back door. He's towing a Cobia fiberglass family runabout with an Evan Roof V4 Star Flight outboard motor, Savage and shoots 22 rifles, Shakespeare fishing rods, Zebco spinning reels, Uncle Josh pork rind. He got Bill Russell quail boots, Barlow knives, case knives, Coleman double mantle lantern, sleeping bags, pup tents, and pack frames. Inside the trailer, he got Monongahela upholstery, shag carpet, Marantz FM tuners, Panasonic television sets, and 2.6 children. And he is sitting tall in the cab of his motorized Conestoga, wearing a Pendleton Mackinaw and smoking a Marsh Wheeling cheroot. He looks down at his little bride. He say, Mama, we are the great, the chosen cosmic consumers. Baby, we're packing everything we'll ever need right here on our backs. They get down to the Lake Monroe Bridge on the St. John's River, and they run into a 35-mile traffic jam backed all the way up from the front gate of Disney World. And a solid phalanx of fools swelters in the Florida sunlight, and a malodorous mantle of carbon monoxide diffuses itself abroad over the spine of the land of flowers. But this man is up for any contingency. He say, "Mama, let us take advantage of this hiatus and go fishing." So they put the boat in the river and set out trolling with 7,500 other pilgrims. Walk across the water on outboard motors. Ain't nobody caught a fish in that part of the St. John's River. There are too many pilgrims. The game commission come down there once a year with a truck with a stainless steel tank on the back full of baby brim, shell crackers, perch, and bass. They commit those baby fish to the bosom of the waters to live and proliferate. 5 minutes later, every mother's son of those new fish is back up on Interstate 10, hitchhiking back to Lake County where they can swim in the water. The last man to catch a fish in that part of the St. John's River was a key punch operator from Valdosta. He came down there with a fishing plug he made himself out of stainless steel, electronically welded. It was an exact replica of one of those tanks the baby fish grew up in. He took home a boatload of fish. They troll down the river. They get down there to the big water. Here's one of these commercial fishermen sitting out there in his hook-nosed skipjack with his high-rise Merc looming up behind. He's got his foot up on the gun. He got his transistor radio hooked onto a rusty nail, tuned into WLW, listening to Merle Haggard sing, "It's not love, but it's not bad." And he is whittling out a minute, functional wood chain out of an Ohio blue tip match with a Barlow knife. He looks up at all the pilgrims coming and he say, "Shit." The next thing you know, one of the tourists insults the appearance of the fisherman's boat. And the next thing he knows, he is racing that good old boy, pink slip for pink slip, title for title, boat for boat. The sun goes down on beautiful Lake George. The noble blue heron and the sassy anhinger return satiated to the sanctity of the rookery. And the commercial fishing fleet returns to the docks at Georgetown, each one of them boys towing 26 Cobia family runabouts. Bright and early Monday morning, he trades all that stuff in at the Evinrude dealer in Palatka, takes the cash down to the bank, renders it into traveler's checks, sends 85% of the proceeds back to Pascagoula to cover alimony arrearage, and buys Mercury outboard motors with the rest. So I'd like to dedicate this whole thing to Mickey Mouse, to Donald Duck, to you and all your friends, me and my buddies, and thank you very much. This is for those fine commercial fishermen, and I didn't want to leave the boys out on Lake Monroe or Lake Lockluse or Lake Okeechobee or any of those other fine places. Most of them like guitar music pretty much, so I'm going to catch my breath here for a minute and see if I can't play you something on the guitar. Thank you. Lawrence Welk likes a boogie. At Camp Blanding. Who needs a wah-wah pill? A night when you're asleep, into your tent I'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light our way to love, and you rule my land with me. You know I'm the Sheik of Araby. Thank you. thank everybody for being here and making this the best Florida Folk Festival in my recent memory, which goes back 20 years. It's been a wonderful time for me. It makes me proud to be from the Sunshine State. If anybody knows this song, how about singing the last chorus with me and we'll take it out together. I'm the sheep of Harriby, and your love belongs to me. It's at night when you're asleep. Let me hear you now. Into your tent I'll creep, and the stars that shine above, the stars that shine above, will light our way to love, will light our way to love. You'll rule my land with me, you'll rule my land with me. I'm the sheik of Araby. One more time now. I'm the sheik of Araby, and your love belongs to me. It's at night when you're asleep, into your tent I'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light our way to love, and you'll rule my land with me. You know I'm the sheik of Araby. Yes, I'm the sheik of Araby.
Well, I'll tell you what I told you last night. If you like him so well, pay $3 tomorrow and come back. Because he's here for the whole weekend. And, Mama, you need to make a sugar tit to put in that baby's mouth, and I'll tell you how to do it. Get some cold grits and some sugar and a little butter and a nice little clean, sterilized rag tied up and put it in the baby's mouth, and he'll go right to sleep. Because what it is, he's tired, hungry, and sleepy. That's it. Okay. We have, just so many fine things. I won't keep on talking. I'll tell you that our next delightful surprise is from Jacksonville. John, Dan, Mike, and Lee, the Peyton brothers.